In the book of Hebrews, chapter 11, after he goes through Abel and Enoch and Noah and Abraham and Sarah and Moses Isaac and Jacob and Joseph, and he keeps going through all these stellar people of faith. And he comes all the way down to, the Israelites, how they kept the Passover. Moses kept the Passover. And by faith, the walls of Jericho came down. And Rahab, the harlot, had faith. He said, all these stellar people of faith. And then he says in verse 32, almost as though, like, I've given you so much. And what more shall I say? What more? He's trying to encourage the Hebrew Christians that were in Jerusalem. What more can I say about this? I've said so much. What more shall I say? And then he says, for time will fail me. I just don't have enough time to go through all these. There are more examples of faith. What more shall I say? Because time will fail me. He had all these elders. So here are the examples, all these examples of faith. And then he talks about more, but he just throws them out. Here it is. What more shall I say? For time will fail me to talk of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah and of David and Samuel and the prophets. What am I going to say about these? And you know what? We have here in the book of Hebrews, we have this statement, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. And by this, these men of old gained approval through faith. They did through their faith. It seems like he says, I've given you so much ammunition, so much proof of what you have as faith and conviction, that he says it's infallible. It's almost infallible proofs. And he's pretty certain about this. What more shall I say? I've given you all these. And in the book of Acts, we have this statement referring to something that David Wallach said in his message. The book of Acts says that he, meaning Jesus Christ, showed himself after his crucifixion, after his sufferings, by many infallible proofs. Many infallible proofs. Now think about that. Here's Christianity. Christianity is built on many infallible proofs. Now, he showed himself to his disciples. He showed himself over a period of 40 days. He showed himself to people who have witnesses. And Paul says, I'm one of the witnesses. I saw him after his resurrection, but I'm only one. There were 500 people saw him at one time. And Peter saw him. He appeared to Peter and to this one and the disciples and so on. Christianity is built on infallible proofs. What is evolution built on? No proof. Theory. No proof. It's been debunked with the electron microscopes that can magnify things 10,000 times over. Not just what we used to look at when I was a kid. We used to look at, take a drop of water from the from a little river or a little pond or something, and you see a little amoebas in it with a microscope 100 times maybe. But now it's 10,000 times. They can see into the human cell. They can see what the DNA is. We can see some of the things that we just talk about. We can see it. So many infallible proofs, philosophies. Philosophies are built on theories. They're not built on, a philosopher. He says, I think that with this, Plato says, I think there's a whole set of things up in the real things are up in heaven, or real things are in the spiritual world, and all that. Well, that's a philosophy. It's not a bad one. There are other philosophies of how you're supposed to live. What is life like, or what are the things that make meaning in life? But they're theories. Quality of proofs. And he says, time would fail me to tell. So Hebrews is plainly saying that the evidence of faith are so many. There are so many evidences of faith, I can't even say them all. Time would fail me to tell of these other men, Gideon, Barak. And by the way, these people that he lists here are not in chronological order. They're just not. Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, okay? Not in chronicle, because Barak came before Gideon. If you go to the book of Judges, Jephthah came before Samson, and Samuel certainly came before David, because, you know, he was already looking for David. Okay, so each of these people in the list, each of them, however, look at these names, came into a society that was already in very bad condition, spiritually and morally. Each one of them. Think about where they came. Think about when Gideon was called. Okay? What was happening in the time of Gideon when he was called? Baal worship was so strong that it was considered a criminal act, punishable by death, to refuse to worship Baal or to do anything against Baal, to say anything against Baal. They were going to kill him. You remember what he did? He went out, remember, and he pulled the statue of Baal down, and they wanted to find out who he was. And Israel was, at that time, overrun by the Midianites. They were taking food from the people of Israel, and they were just in, you know, they seemed to be powerless against the Midianites. So here's Gideon, comes on the scene here, and there's the situation that he had to deal with. What about Barak? When Barak, or Barak, B-A-R-A-K, Barak, we find that men of Israel seem to be so weak and so diffident that a woman leader had to be and kind of push Barak himself. You remember what he said? Well, we'll talk about that in a minute. How about when we meet Samson? When we meet up with Samson, Israel was oppressed by the Philistines for 40 years because of their evil. Israel went into evil, and God allowed the Philistines to oppress them for 40 years. In the time of Jephthah, Baal worship abounded. And the lack of leadership was so great, and you know who Jephthah was. You know, he was born to a harlot, and his kids threw him out, and he ran off to some place with a bunch of no good guys. But he was a good fighter. He was a good fighter. So when they were so lacking in leadership, let's call Jephthah back and help him lead. And they went to the land of Tob and got him back to lead Israel and to fight against the Midianites. In the time of David, of course, David, when he came on the scene, Israel had suffered tremendous decline under Saul. King Saul had let the country go down, and, you know, he couldn't seem to get himself around. David tried to play. He went sort of crazy. He was saying, you know, acting crazy, Saul was. And David tried to play for him, but he would get crazy, want to kill David. He was so paranoid and so insecure. And when even though Saul killed his thousands, when they saying that David killed his 10,000s, that upset Saul. I can't take that. A man is doing better than me. I've got to kill him. I mean, that's crazy. So David's reign came about and restored power and wealth. Power and wealth is. He went out and conquered this, he conquered here, he conquered there, and he brought that wealth into Israel, putting this into the treasury, getting ready to build the house for God. When Samuel was chosen, in the time of Samuel, the priesthood had fallen into disrepair. Eli, some people call him Eli, meaning my God, Eli had let his kids desecrate and bring into repute the priesthood of Israel. His boys were grabbing things from them, laying with women who came in close to the temple and doing this and that. And Eli kind of knew it, but he didn't do anything about it. And finally, Eli was himself, Israel was defeated. The Ark of the Covenant was taken. And what was Samuel? It was a little boy on the scene. And then he says, he used, by the way, here's verse 32, Hebrews 11. Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, and David, and Samuel, and the prophets. And the prophets. The prophets were called, all of them called on the scene because of apostasy. Israel was leaving God's way. Why would you call a prophet? Here's Amos. Amos says, I'm a fruit picker. What do you want? What do you want from me? Go down there and tell them they're leaving. You tell them what God says. I'm giving you the word of God. Forget the priests. You go on there and you say what God spoke to you. So here they go. One after another of the prophets chosen because the priesthood had fallen down in its duties. All of these heroes, every one of them, came from rather humble, rather ordinary, rather low socioeconomic status, very low political status during their lives. They were not the greats and the near greats of their societies. Think about it. What was Gideon? Gideon knew lowliness. He knew what it was. What did he say when they came to get him for his family? He says, well, my family is poor in Manasseh. And I'm the least one of my family. That's in Judges chapter 6 and verse 15. My family's lowly, very lowly. You know, we're not rich, we're not great, you know, and I'm the least of my family. So he said to the Lord, how shall I deliver? You know, you remember what the angel of the Lord said to Gideon? It's almost like, who are you talking about? The angel says, hello there, O mighty man of valor. Gideon's like, well, who are you talking about? Are you talking to me or somebody around here? Who's the mighty man of valor? He didn't think of himself as a mighty man of valor. He didn't think of himself as anything. My family's a low-class family, and I'm the least of my family, and you're choosing me. So he said, oh, Lord, how can I deliver Israel when my family is least in Manasseh and I'm the youngest in my family? That's another translation of Judges 6, verse 15. Who was Barak, or Barak? He was a sort of, I don't want to use the phrase, you know, we use this, he was sort of a nobody. You know what I mean? A nobody who was forced into God's service by Deborah. You read it in Judges chapter 4, verse 3. The sons of Israel cried to the Eternal, for he had, this is this Sisera and his group, they had 900 chariots, and he oppressed the sons of Israel for 70, for 20 years, severely oppressed the sons of Israel. Now, verse 4, this is Judges chapter 4, verse 4. Now, Deborah, a prophetess, the wife, now, she had a husband, but she was definitely the leader. She was judging Israel at that time. She used to sit under the palm tree of Deborah between Ramah and Bethel in the hill country of Ephraim. And the sons of Israel came up to her for judgment. Now, she was a prophetess of God. She made judgments. People said, well, what should we do about this? What should we do on that? And evidently, she received wisdom, understanding, and judgment from the Lord. Now she sent, here's what she does. She sent and summoned Barak, the son of Abinoam, from Kadesh Naphtali. And she said to him, "Behold, the Lord, the Eternal, the God of Israel, has commanded." Now, she received an absolute command. He's commanded, "Go and march to Mount Tabor and take with you 10,000 men, the sons of Naphtali, and from the sons of Zebulun, and I will draw out to you Sisera and the commander of Jabin's army, and with his chariots and his many troops to the river of Kishon, and I will give him into your hand." Now here's the absolute prophet. Here's what you're supposed to do. Go do it. Well, Barak hears it, and he said to her, "Well, I'll go if you'll go with me. I'll do it if you'll go. But if you won't go with me, I'm not going." Okay. Boy, that didn't sound like a lot. How did he get into the annals of faith? You know, you wonder, well, she received the word of God, and she says, "God has commanded you. Go to this place and do this." And he says, "I'll go if you go. You put your money where your mouth is too. You know, I'll go if you go. But if you don't go, I'm not going." So she said, "I will surely go with you." You always want to say, you know, "You sissy, I'll go with you. You don't have any guts. You have no, you don't want to do it. Nevertheless, I'll go with you. But now the honor shall not be yours on the journey. Not on the journey that you're about to take. For the Eternal will sell Sisera into the hands of a woman." So you're not going to get that. Remember Jael, she was the one that drove the spike through the temple. So here's the guy. Well, how great was he? He wasn't anything great at that time, but he had to be propped up. But he did it. Samson was a religious Nazarite who came from a lowly home and out of the lowly tribe of Dan. But he became a person of faith. Jephthah, the outcast, illegitimate son, came back. You read this in Judges chapter 11, 1 through 3. Judges. Now Jephthah, the Gileadite, was a valiant warrior. But he was the son of a harlot. He had the same father, but his father kind of dabbled around a little bit, so he had other brothers. And Gilead, his father, was the father of Jephthah. And Gilead's wife bore him sons. When his wife's sons grew up, they drove Jephthah out and said to him, "You shall not have an inheritance in our father's house, for you are the son of another woman." You know, there are consequences you do to kids. There are things you do to kids. There are things you do to kids when you're immoral. There are things that you do. So here's Jephthah. For no fault of his own, his father dabbled with a harlot, they said, and had now, here he comes into the world. He is rejected. He is scorned. So Jephthah fled from his brothers and lived in the land of Tob. And worthless fellows gathered around Jephthah, and they went out with them. So after all the troubles now, they need somebody to fight. There's nobody to lead. The leadership was so pathetic during those times that they have to call Jephthah back. And the elders say, "Well, let's bring Jephthah back. Lead us now. Fight for us. You know what? We'll forgive everything. Hey, everything's okay now. You know, we drove you out, but we want you back." David, what was David? King David was... he was left in the field when Samuel came to select the king. So So I heard that Jesse's kids were really good. You know, I'm going to go there to see Jesse's kids. So he, you know, God told him, go to Jesse and find the king. So his family, his father, and all his brothers thought so little of him. His father thought so little of him that when he was presenting them to Samuel, he was left out. Oh, you don't want to see him. He's out tending the sheep. And so David, the youngest one, and finally Samuel said to Jesse, are these all your kids? I mean, God, because remember, each one passed by and God said, not him, not him, not him. I don't want him. I don't want him. And he said, well, there remains yet the youngest, and behold, he's out tending the sheep. Then Samuel said to Jesse, well, bring him in here, for we will not sit down until he comes here. We're not through with this. Bring him in here. And David was, if you remember, despised by his brother, the oldest brother. You remember when they were all marching, here is Goliath out there. And Jesse calls David. He says, you know, your brothers are out there trying to fight for Israel. You take this to them. Take this and take a little something for gifts. And you take this to them. So here's what it says. First, and you remember the story. This is in 1 Samuel. I won't read it all. But here David comes. He's got all this pack. And he's hearing this. By this time, this guy comes out. I'll charge the armies of Israel. You know, he's taunting them. And nobody steps up. And Saul made something. It says, it was the man who can defeat this man, I'll give him my daughter. So David comes up. He's hearing the words. People are talking, you know. And he says, he asks the question, I want to get this right. Well, what will be given? What will be given to the man that kills this guy? Well, what will Saul give to him? And here it is. This is 1 Samuel now, chapter 17, verse 28. Now Eliab, his older brother, heard that when he spoke, he doesn't ask his own brother, but his brother hears him asking other men, what is it that he's going to do for the man that kills this guy? And Eliab's anger burned against David, and he said, why have you come down here? You know, why'd you get over here? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? You know, you should be watching your sheep. What are you doing here? I know your insolence, he says, and the wickedness of your heart. For you have come down in order to see the battle. You just came down here. You just want to stick your nose in things. You just want to see a good fight. You know, what are you doing here? And David said, what have I done now? This is a translation. What have I done now? I just ask a question. You know, I'm just asking one question. Well, what's going to be given to the man that kills this man? Here is David. He was looked on as so lowly in his family. His older brother despised him and yelled at him and called him. You know, I know the insolence. You're no good. I know your insolence. Why are you come down here? And what about Samuel? Samuel was a small boy when he entered the tabernacle to help Eli. His mother had to keep him until she weaned him. Now, I suppose she weaned him at age 4 or 5 because I know she didn't want to part with him. She was trying to nurse him as long as she could until she ran out, and then he was too big, and then finally she gives him over to the temple. So here's Samuel, a little boy at the tabernacle working for Eli. And during that time, you know, he was a prophet. During that time, prophets generally were despised in Israel. If you were crazy, hey, what's a prophet? He's crazy. You remember Eldad and Medad? They come down. They're playing songs and they're acting kind of. They're hearing things and they're playing. They're reacting to music. And you remember that they played this music and Saul was acting kind of crazy. He got in the music and they said, oh, he's acting crazy. Maybe Saul's one of the prophets. And the prophets were looked on as crazy. Being a prophet was not a great station, but Samuel turned it around. The great writing prophets had not come on the scene. And speaking of prophets, most of the prophets were despised during their day. Only after their death, posthumously we call it, were they really regarded as something great. So here we have our text, Hebrews 11, verse 32. And what more shall I say? The time would fail me. I don't have time to tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and the prophets. I don't have time. He names these people, none of whom were great in their society, which says, no matter where you come from, no matter what your genealogy, no matter what your station, faith can make you great. We'll talk more about the rest of this verse and the next verse in our next sermon.